Chapter 2. Old age is happy hour. I remember a time when I was unsuspicious, trusting, and actually quite smart. I'm now trotting down the other lane. Life did that. But it's not that bad, because my old age is not only better than my grandparents, but it is better than my own early, simpler years, when I could work all day and play all night and never feel a twinge. Okay. So my innocence has vanished down the drain, and not even Drano can bring it up. But wait until I list the tasty collections of all the goodies that has come from my old age. We'll forget Alzheimer's, arthritis, and angina, and that's only the A's. That's sore head, heebie-jeebie talk. I'll get to that later. How I'd like to do some comparison shopping. Sociologist Linsky says, and I quote, "Comparison is the basis of science, and far be it for me to argue with science." So from that perspective, let's compare the end to the beginning of life and see which is better, scientifically speaking, that is. First, contrary to what I believed when I was young, for instance, it would be better to be dead than 90 years old, well, forget that. I was wrong. When I was young, I worried incessantly about purchases, parties, power, privileges, and pounds. Putting on the pounds then, not taking them off. And that's only the start. But I no longer care about any of those problems. I'm not anxious about anything anymore, except some minor disagreements among friends. Today, I've replaced my childlike trust with skepticism, and that's another gratifying thing about old age. I've also become cynical and leery of everything. So, who wants to be cynical? I know, cynicism is not a braggable quality, but if I'd been less trusting and more leery years ago, life would have been less hurtful and more fun. Yeah, I've heard trust is good, and it may be endearing, but the trustee is often in for a big letdown. My best friend, you complain, and he took me to the cleaners. You were dumb. No, I was trusting. Anyhow, before I forget, and I forget easily now, as I pointed out ad nauseam, let me pass on a few examples of ideas I trustingly agreed with totally once upon a time and cynically have had to chuck. Number one, Shakespeare, who I admired with all my heart and soul in my youth, that guy who said, "Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage." Well, this guy, who it turns out in his time, was seen as nothing more than a 16th century gossip columnist for the rich and famous and politically powerful. Somebody suggested to me that Rush Limbaugh and important gossip columnists for the rich, famous, and powerful comes closest to what Shakespeare was in his time. And while many of my Democratic friends grimace at the idea, who knows, 400 years from now, people may be putting on plays about Limbaugh's gutsy, formidable words. Does that brighten all my liberal friends today, or doesn't it? And taking it from another historical perspective, Jesus was an ordinary rabbi carpenter who developed a bitch against John the Baptist and went around the country complaining about him, and didn't become divine until 400 years after his death at the Council of Nicaea, when a bunch of priests got together and took some kind of vote, and the ones who wanted him declared divine won the contest, which was a big shift for the population from classical rationalism to Christian mysticism. Where would we be if the other side had won? Would we still be rationalists? Something to think about there. Another big shakaroo was being taught in school that World War I was a result of economic rivalry and an arms race in Europe. Furthermore, I wasn't taught that Kaiser Wilhelm of Germany, King George of England, and Tsar Nicholas of Russia were cousins, all grandchildren of Queen Victoria, and they had squabbles like kids do. Kaiser said about World War I, I believe he said it to the Tsar, whom he called Nicky, if Grandma were alive, she never would have allowed it. Who wants to believe 80 million people died over a cousinly flap that Granny could have fixed? It's one thing for a cousin to knock over your blocks, but another to kill off 80 million people because you're pissed at him. Told some friends about this and they refused to believe it. We're suckers who like to believe our wars are fought for high-minded reasons like economics or oil. And poor Freud. Remember when he had all the answers to life's problems? It was sex. Now that was a fun psychology in those early no-no sexual years. They should have left that one alone. But no, as everyone knows, all those ideas about sex have all been debunked. Not to mention most of his other ideas. Behavioral psychology has taken over. It works. We're all the end result of our learning. And did you know Marx was an alcoholic who couldn't keep a job? Which is the most cheering thought I've had all day. There may be some hope for my jobless grandkids after all. And you've heard this one before, but I must repeat it. Everything we learned when we were young, except reading, writing, and arithmetic, has turned out to be wrong. So what we've learned, we can unlearn. I've had to go through a lot of unlearning, not only about the flaws of heroes and heroines, but about the flaws of leaders, culture, and values. But one of the side effects of this march of times is disillusionment. Like I was so misguided about Freud, Shakespeare, Jesus, Marx, etc., all of whom were either God or semi-gods in my youth. Now gone. But in my cynicism, it's satisfying to know they were flawed and sometimes grossly wrong. On the other hand, they made maximum contributions. For example, Freud, whose reputation has tanked, nevertheless practically invented psychology. Once I fretted, strived, and failed, but now along with my cynicism, I'm calmer. No more angry outbursts over trivialities. And who cares if I strive and fail? So what? So did just about everyone else. Friends are precious now, as so many of them are dying off, and it's hard to replace those old ones. Friends take emotional work in the beginning, and a lot of time, and we're tired, and we don't want to work, whether it's sweat work or emotional work. Not to mention all the time we put in establishing our interesting personalities for them. And I can recall those sleepless nights of my youth when I was so anxious about money or lack thereof, about losing the job, the car, the kids, the future, you name it. I could lie awake all night fretting and anxiously checking that bedside clock and wondering if anyone else was as messed up as I was. Yeah, sleepless nights are sometimes still a problem, but it's not worry so much about heavy stuff like money, jobs, marriage, etc., as it is about, was that remark I made about shrinks hurtful to my psychologist friend? And at the same time, remember when we were young and had to do the math bathroom rung and we tripped over Legos, teddy bears, and trucks? And for those who don't do that inexorable bathroom run in the dark, I mitigate my envy of them somewhat by telling myself, maybe they aren't getting enough liquids. Dehydration is supposedly common amongst the elderly. When young, I was constantly looking up something in a dictionary, an encyclopedia, or science textbook. Silly stuff like who built the Brooklyn Bridge, or why the paper mill moved out of town, or how to get rid of those carpenter ants making their home under my sink. I knew those things now. I don't have to look them up. And as for the ants, I go to Home Depot and ask a salesperson for some spray. And remember that job that was so boring, that I hated? I know it doesn't look so bad in hindsight, but I'm pretty sure if I were back there in a few months, I'd be as bored as I was then. Ambition is more or less a thing of the past, which may be sad for some. Oh, cry me a river about that. But plenty of relieving for others, like yours truly. And here's one that will make young women envious of old farts like myself, if anything can. I can now eat whatever I want, when I want it, and best of all, as much as I want. Because by 80, most of us have reached that much hype set point, and no discipline or denial is needed anymore. But for the few of us who haven't reached that set point, try not to get so fat pallbearers can't carry your casket. Whenever I see someone so obese that they have to get around in a wheelchair, on one hand I want to express my sympathy with a smile, but on the other hand I wonder, wouldn't that encumbrance diminish the possibility of a job? So where's their food money coming from? Is the government aiding and abetting obesity grocery addiction? Food, you know, is the easiest snort to get hooked on. Narcotics and alcohol pale by comparison. When young, I ate dinner in a restaurant at least once a week, more often twice, but don't like to eat alone now, so don't do that anymore. I'm particularly partial to spicy food in my dotage. But at one time, years ago, I was so unaccustomed to spicy food. The first time I sunk my bicuspids into a spicy burrito, I had to spit it out and wash out my mouth. But I've since become hooked on burritos and have a hard time going a week without a Mexican meal. When I first lived alone, I ate frozen TV dinners. Never could find one I liked. Then deli. That was a flopperoo. After that, fast foods. My enchantment with that one ranked minus one. So now I eat sandwiches with soup I spice up. I'm particular about the bread I eat. At the same time, lucky are the guys who have wives whose hobby is gourmet cooking. And lucky are the wives who have husbands who take them out frequently for dinner. Sartre wanted to unravel the existential significance of food. For instance, he didn't eat crab or lobster as they reminded him of insects. So I've been cogitating on unraveling my existential significant food. Well, I like almost anything spicy. But other than that, my taste buds aren't in top shape anymore. In comparison to my youth, food has lost a lot of glamour. Or maybe it's that I'm lucky I never had a romance with delicate flavors. I can't come up with any existentially significant food. Scratch that, I can. The only way anyone could get oatmeal mush down me is to tie me up and force it down. And then I'd vomit it up. Been that way since age 3. About living quarters. First off, I've stayed where I am for the past 30 years. In my salad days, I moved a lot. What a drag. I hated it, as there is nothing harder than moving and getting adjusted and acquainted with new neighbors in a strange environment. So I'm adamant about staying where I am. If I couldn't afford to live where I am, well, I'd try to think positive. Moving is going to be an adventure. Okay, so I don't need any more adventure at my age. But thinking negatively about the inescapable is a downer. So if you have to live in a small place, fix it up. You'll eventually get used to it and learn to love it. Embrace yourself. Remember when money was everything? Money doesn't matter that much anymore. Whether we have a lot or a little, keeping up with the Joneses show-off time is past. If we have a lot of money, we'll take trips, buy stuff for the kids, or indulge ourselves in a boat or plane we seldom use. If there's only a little money in the pot, we'll spend our time maybe fishing, watching TV, riding bikes, or practicing our hobbies. But I'll let you in on a secret. As we're all depression babies, both the rich old and the poor old, we were never high rollers, even if we have money. So we'll probably do a little hiking, show off our motorcycling abilities, watch TV, and if we spend any money, it will be after doing some bargain hunting. And remember that killer status we thought we had as a heartbreaker when we were young, which often ended up as a big letdown? We've been retired from that sex role unless we want it. The old equipment isn't in a very good condition anymore. For myself, it's been so long since I've done the routine. It probably needs a big overhaul. Although it's probably so worn out, an overhaul won't do much good. And probably the biggest plus of old age is that old age, in comparison to youth, brings wisdom, which few of us get until we're old. Yeah, I know I'm retarded about technology. But tech acumen is not necessary for a good presidency. Wisdom is, though. Hence, as a result, no one should be a judge or a president until they reach 70, no matter how smart they are. And our kids, finally grown and on their own. Whew, they made it. We made it. So now we can all relax. Granted, they're not that crazy about us. But face it, parents were evolutionarily programmed to love their kids and even sacrifice their lives for their genetic progeny. And the kids probably won't even sacrifice an evening out on the town for us. But we're wise. We understand, don't we? The reason I'm such an apostle for the bucolic life of old age is because when I was young, like in my 20s and 30s, I hooped it up, got in trouble, and was so unhappy. My psychiatrist told me I'd end up in a mental institution at the rate I was going. Well, the end is near, and whether the four horsemen of the apocalypse are hitching up, I don't know. But I'm not in an institution, a nursing home, or dependent on anyone. And best of all, I don't need any pills. I get up each morning, put on the coffee pot, and look outside at the trees, and relish my luck at still being alive and not yet in need of diapers. Or maybe old age is so sweet because the beginning, which was that era, even before the present boomer era of benign neglect, was that spare the rod and spoil the child was that period. Definitely not a hot sell to us as 4 and 5 year olds. Plus everything was obedience to authority, parents, teachers, and then bosses. Lots more aggression, and I guess what they called tough love floating around then. I remember kids covered with bruises from their beatings, myself included. Some guys were proud of the beatings they took and bragged about them. Hard for someone to believe that went on then. But as we all grew up expecting life to be hard, we learned how to avoid punishment. Or if we had to, take a pummeling. World War II soldiers had an easy time of it then. Today's soldiers do. Probably because of those early rods that weren't spared. But I think the comedy of American aggression has had its run, at least with kids, and is about to ring down the curtain. So age brings an absence of love, but love isn't all it's cracked up to be. It makes inroads on our time, attention, and energy, which has to be rationed. But that's okay, as age has bestowed wisdom, right, on us, and as an offshoot of wisdom is happiness. Besides, once we get love, it's boring. Can't do what we want. It always has to be something that the other would be agreeable with. Well, I've about worn out my welcome on that, and so we'll sign off for now. We old duffers have it pretty good. It's a better time than it was in our youth. And in comparison to our grandparents, it's first rate. A real blast. We have been allowed to entertain ourselves with travel, golf, TV, free classes in yoga, gourmet cooking, quilt making, and a dance. We receive senior discounts at restaurants, shops, and rentals, free bus passes, half-price movie tickets, and geriatric scientists are coming up with new drugs yearly. We have retirement communities graced with tennis courts, swimming pools, nurses, and special dining rooms. We have high rises that take 30% of our income to cover rent and utilities and provide free transport from the front door. We amuse ourselves with hobbies, carry on romances with cars, take cruises, and enjoy an endless cornucopia of recreational diversions, and do all of this while sucking up a huge portion of the youthful taxpayers' salaries that support us with Social Security, Medicare, hospices, senior centers, nursing homes, and Meals on Wheels. Yes, my mates, old age is a bestseller, comparatively speaking. You'll love it. Wait, you'll see.